You're listening to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. What a way to start the day, Bob Marley. It's 7 a.m. here in New York, and coming up next, What's Going On with Rebecca Miles.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Good morning and welcome to What's Going on WBAI's Morning Magazine Show. I'm Rebecca Miles, your host today in this revolving host chair. We want to hear from you when we open the phone lines at 7:20 a.m. and 7:40 a.m. This morning, on the first half of the show, we've invited Mukesh Kapili, a writer, professor emeritus and global health humanitarian and strategy advisor. He's held leadership roles in government, the United Nations and its multilateral agencies, the International Red Cross and the Red Crescent, civil society and academia. His work has taken him to 120 countries. He was the first to report on the unfolding UN Office of Project Services scandal in his blog. He'll be joining us from Geneva, Switzerland this morning. The scandal involves, so far, a missing $60 million in financing for affordable housing in Goa, India, and Ghana, among other places. Kapila has literally been following the money and has the details on this scandal that is grabbing news headlines. So how far does the corruption go and how high? Also joining us later on the show is David Swanson, Executive Director of World Beyond War, and campaign coordinator with Roots Action. He'll help us understand how the US Congress so easily voted to spend $40 billion on an additional military aid to the Ukraine without barely a dissenting vote and certainly little about accountability or oversight in a war that is just 11 weeks old. This while right here, there are food shortages and inflation. I don't know if you've been to the supermarket recently, but everybody's grumbling. You take out the money that you paid last week, and it's not enough. The states will have to borrow $40 billion to cover the cost of this $40 billion aid package. All this and more, but first, here's Pacifica's Radio's National Morning Newscast.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy and historic times.
Every voter needs to have their ballot counted and their voice heard.
Pennsylvania's acting Secretary of the Commonwealth, Lee Chapman, said there are still about 50,000 primary ballots left to be counted from Tuesday's election, where Republican U.S. Senate candidates Dr. Mehmet Oz and former hedge fund CEO David McCormick remained neck and neck. Incumbents have not fared well in the nine states holding primaries so far. 44 state legislative incumbents lost to challengers a rate of 4.7% compared to 3.3% in 2020. President Joe Biden is expected to sign the nearly $40 billion package of aid for Ukraine approved by the Senate, with Kentucky Republican Rand Paul among the 11 who voted against.
I wonder if Americans across our country would agree if they had been shown the cost, if they had been asked to pay for it.
Meanwhile, the Senate failed to overcome a key procedural hurdle to advance a $48 billion bid to provide pandemic aid to a number of industries, including restaurants. The House approved a bill to punish gas companies engaging in price gouging. However, Republican Fred Keller of Pennsylvania argues greater investments in American energy are needed to lower prices.
The Biden administration is intentionally suffocating domestic oil and gas production in hopes to replace fossil fuels with the socialist Green New Deal agenda.
Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm expects record-high gas prices to get worse before they get better, but is confident clean energy tax credits will be approved in bipartisan congressional energy and climate policy negotiations.
They absolutely need to pass, and I am feeling actually pretty bullish about it at this very moment.
Some congressional Democrats want the Biden administration to assign a national strategy coordinator to address the infant formula shortage. Senator Patty Murray says the blame lies with the company that recalled the formula, the FDA, and the government for a lack of interagency communication.
Nobody did their job here.
The White House announced the first flights to deliver infant formula from Europe to the U.S. will happen soon. The House committee investigating the January 6 attack wants to talk to Georgia Congressman Barry Loudermilk about a tour he gave the day before protesters stormed the U.S. Capitol. The committee is looking into reported attempts to obtain information about the layout of the building. Oklahoma passed a bill to ban abortions from the moment of fertilization and allow private citizens to sue abortion providers who perform the procedure. Vice President Kamala Harris condemned the legislation, among the strictest abortion bans in the country.
At its core, this is about our future as a nation, about whether we live in a country where the government can interfere in personal decisions.
The Department of Homeland Security is pausing its disinformation governance board just 3 weeks after its launch, pending a review of the larger strategy behind it. Critics objected to a lack of clarity over its mission and worried it would be used to censor free speech. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And that's the Nottingham band Sleaford Mods that played at Irving Plaza this Wednesday night. I went to the first concert I've been to in a long time. That was a track called BHS, Going Down Like the BHS. I think they were maybe punning on either British Home Stores or probably the National Health Service. They are riotously witty and on point about universal angst. I think they call it post-punk or pre-punk or neo-punk. Anyway, they're great fun. I would check them out. Sleaford Mods. This is WBAI. What's going on? I'm Rebecca Miles. We'll turn to our guest this morning, Mukesh Kapila, who's a writer, professor emeritus and global health humanitarian and strategy advisor, is joining us from Geneva, Switzerland. He's held leadership roles in government, the United Nations and its multilateral agencies, the International Red Cross and Red Crescent, civil society and academia. His work has taken him to 120 countries, and he was the first to report on the unfolding United Nations Office of Project Services scandal in his blog. I'm intrigued that in his blog, he says it's not always easy to do the right thing, and one may not always succeed, but one must try. The headline in the New York Times about this scandal was head of UN agency resigns after questions arise about loans. It's a little known organization. And the scandal initially involves the agency handing out $61 million in loans and grants to a single British family in a scandal that has shaken the agency. So welcome to the show, Mukesh.
Thank you. Glad to join you.
Great. And you sound terrific. I'm glad you're here this morning. So just let's start with this agency, which I'd never heard of, the Office of Project Services. It has a mission to help people build better lives and countries achieve peace and sustainable development. And it specializes in infrastructure building, procurement, personal recruitment, and payroll handling. So in essence, this is sort of the bank of the United Nations, would you say?
Well, it's the backroom of the United Nations. It does all the backroom stuff that other organizations don't want to do. It's a big organization. Most people haven't heard of it. You're quite right. It's something like a $3.4 to $4 billion a year organization. And it works in at least 80 countries around the world, employing thousands of personnel. So it's a very important part of the UN system.
So what led you to, in the beginning, to look into this? And it began, of course, with this scandal of this like one loan given to one family. But where did this all begin for you in your investigation? And you've been regularly blogging about this. The New York Times picked it up. But there's a lot more to this story, I know, and you're slowly unfolding this. But where did this all begin for you?
Well, for me, because I have worked in the UN system and I've seen all aspects of it, good and bad, I was very concerned when staff inside the organization started telling me about the wrongdoings of the organization. And anyone who knows me and my kind of previous roles in international affairs knows that when things are happening wrong, especially in the international sphere, then, I feel compelled to speak up. So that's how the whole thing started.
And you were able to get hold of emails going back several years, and you started to see from this that back in 2015, this organization teamed up with a private sector. They were involved with exchanging sort of privileges where clients could rent prestigious UN's logo and benefit from associated taxes and privileges. What did you start to see uncover before you saw this scandal over the 61 million?
Yeah. So basically before that, just to explain, the UN system is not a profit-making system. It hasn't been set up by the world's countries to make money out of the world's misery and poverty, the crises and disasters, which you all know about and are happening, wars and conflicts. So, normally the UN does its work and it has to be paid to obviously cover its costs. But what UNOPS did was it went into a private sector mode where it started profiting from donations, including very significant donations from the United States government. The US, in fact, is the biggest donor to UNOPS. So what UNOPS did was to use the leverage of the money it got into its accounts to run projects. And on the back of that, it did deals with private companies, and not just private companies selected through due process and proper due diligence and examination of what is the best company to hire for whichever project you want to do in whichever poor country you want to operate in. It was almost like a sweetheart deal with a few companies that the head of the organization met on a visit to New York. And so this is completely against the UN's own rules. And this then outraged many staff inside the organization who raised their concerns. They were ethically troubled and challenged. And they said, hey, what's happening in our name? Because the UN is trusted and it's a very sacred organization in that sense, is being betrayed, and we can't tolerate it. Now, when the senior management of the organization, including, incidentally, people at the very top, that includes, Antonio Guterres and the leadership of the main UN sitting in Manhattan, they got really outraged that no one was listening to them, even though they have got policies about speaking up when something goes wrong and all those kinds of things. So they came to me and they showed me information and evidence and the story. And I felt that because my main interest in life really is to do what I can in terms of helping people who are vulnerable to crises, disasters and poverty around the world, that this was outrageous. They were not just cheating donors, and I've been a donor in the past. I was in a position in the British government as a donor where I actually also gave money to UNOPS in the past. But not just cheating donors, but they were robbing the poor and vulnerable people of the world and not delivering on the services for which they had been given a grant. So in one sense, this is really quite a simple story, and it's outrageous.
Now, you've even went to Delhi during a heat wave to investigate one of these offices that, you mentioned that the UNOPS has offices in 80 countries. It employs 12,000 people. So you went to Delhi and you went to one of the addresses. And what did you find?
Well, yes, the project concerned affordable housing for poor people in India. Also, there are similar projects apparently to be done in countries like Nigeria, the Caribbean, Guinea, and so on. So I happened to be in India, so I thought I'd go and see. And what I found was, one, there was not even a hole in the ground to show for the project there. They were supposed to build 50,000 houses there, and there was not even a hole in the ground. And then when you go to the office of the company with which UNOPS had a contract to do this business, it was just an accommodation address, a shell company. And they admitted the relationship. They admitted that they were in a relationship with UNOPS to make affordable houses. They refused then to reveal any more information, and saying that I should go to UNOPS and ask them. They've been told to shut up and not say anything. So basically, reported this to Indian authorities, who were outraged. And the Indian authorities are now thinking of a ban on this company operate, or this UN initiative operating in India. And also, you know what it is? People think, oh, well, India is a corrupt country because all these countries are corrupt. Therefore, what do you expect? But actually, this is a story about corruption, not about in developing countries or in poor, vulnerable countries in the world. This is a corruption at the heart of our global system, which is funded to the tune of billions by world taxpayers.
Of course, and I think the project you were talking about in India was in Goa, but as you say, there was not even a hole in the ground. But it's also projects in Ghana, I read, Haiti, Sudan, Sri Lanka, Dubai, countries, not necessarily Dubai, but countries that certainly could benefit from affordable housing. Certainly in this country, there's a need for affordable housing. So I'm wondering, in listening to you, of course, I'm reminded of the Iraq Oil for Food program. That was a scandal that took an inquiry in 2000, the Volcker inquiry, to sort of, I'm not even sure it got to the bottom of all of that, but there was egregious profiteering by UN agencies, including UNOPS. I mean, it was even then involved in a scandal. Do you think it's on the scale of that? Are we talking of the same scale as that?
Well, the Volcker inquiry, which could only happen because the United States decided to take action. Normally, the UN is immune. It doesn't kind of respond to individual country jurisdictions. There's no accountability. Apart from the fact there is no transparency. You can't sue the UN because it just ignores you in a way. But the Volcker inquiry, the Iraq war, was so outrageous that the U.S. government really put the thumbscrews on the UN, and the UN had to give up its immunities so that the Volcker inquiry could take place, which is a federal inquiry, not a UN inquiry. Mm-hmm. And yes, it showed that billions had gone astray through corrupted deals and lining people's pockets. Now, this case that we're talking about here doesn't affect billions. We're only talking here about 60-odd millions. But this is only one aspect of this organization. It's a $3 to $4 billion organization. The internal rules that were broken in the organization could as easily be broken for other projects that this organization also does around the world, the UNOPS does around the world. So what I've been saying is that, okay, this is $60 million, which is a big enough sum of money. Imagine what you could do, how many houses you could build with $60 million for poor people around the world if people did what they were supposed to do. But so then imagine if something like this is happening for other similar or related or unrelated projects, the bigger organization. That's why the US and the European donors and others are or should stop funding the organization until it's cleaned up and we have a proper inquiry, the results of which are published and in the public domain. The UN says it's done an inquiry. But as is typical for UN inquiries, it's not obliged to reveal what the inquiry says, so we don't know. And meanwhile, the head of the organization has resigned suddenly, and the deputy head of the organization is under the investigation. So this kind of story is not about corruption lower down, which happens in any organization in the world. It can happen in any government. It can happen in the US. It can happen anywhere in the world. It's about the misbehavior and misconduct and mismanagement, or worse, coming from the very top of an organization.
Do you think the UN Secretary General's implicated in this? Do you think he knew about it, knew what was going on?
Well, I think there were warning signs. And as early on as, I think, 2016-17, a complaint was made to the UN's Office for Oversight Services, which is their internal police, to look into these things. And those complaints were brushed under the carpet. I'm sure the Secretary General must have been informed. He would have been informed. And they tried, in a sense, to just say, hope that this will go away and to brush everything under the carpet. It would be obviously embarrassing for the UN leadership. I mean, you know, the UN is not no stranger to fraud and corruption, but it was completely ignored from the very top leadership of the UN. Yes.
Yes, we're talking to Mukesh Kapile, who in his blog has uncovered and exposed a scandal with a UN agency. The Office of Project Services, which is tasked with contracting out to build affordable housing around the world. It's a very detailed blog. It's worth checking out. Mukeshkapile.org, is it, or .com?
.org.
.org. Worth checking out. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It's 57 degrees. We will take a little musical break here. We'll open up the phone lines. The number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. If you've got a question for Mukesh Kapile, who's to be with us till the half hour, it's now 7:23.
Bus voices.
Talk about the science of how things break, how the heart breaks, how the age founders shatters with no one listening, how the mind quakes, how we lose all that matters. Oh, the music of the bones, music of sage and white stones. Let's talk about the art of how things break. Things that were hard to make. Things like peace and love and need. How the nations
change on the music of Cosmosis.
Yeah. She was looking for a prince, so now she's hitting the road. She tried kissing a frog, oh now she's licking a toad. Spiritual girl, she's got a story to tell. She taught me to love myself, forget everyone else. Forget and I forgive, I don't give it attention. How you feel about me, it's just a reflection. I'm out of my ego, I'm back into space. Hold me in your arms and feel the connection.
Cosmosis. Cosmosis. Yeah, man.
The present moment began with fire, and still it burns. The present moment began with fire, and still it burns.
And that was Cosmosis by the late great Afrobeat pioneer Tony Allen, a track from his posthumous album featuring Scepter and Ben Okra. Mukesh, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Great. We don't seem to have any calls at the moment. It may be that it's such a complex story that people don't have comment. Usually we do get some calls. So I wanted to ask you, because in your responsibilities and your achievements in life, you work for the Red Cross, the International Red Cross. And I was just thinking while we were on the break there, while we're talking about scandals, and of course, agencies like the Red Cross have had their own scandal involving corruption and missing monies. What is it when you have these large organizations that what are the measures that could be put in place where corruption doesn't happen?
I think corruption happens in all sorts of organizations. It's not particularly Red Cross or humanitarian organizations or international organizations, national organizations or governments, for example. And this is true all around the world, sadly. Now, what can be done about it is, of course, there's a multi-billion anti-corruption industry all in its own regard. You know, in the end, we need transparency and accountability. In other words, for organizations, companies, and so on, to work to legal standards which ensure that their business accounts, procedures, reports, etc., are in the public domain, so that anyone can actually question what they're doing and ascertain correct information. If you don't have transparency, then of course corruption flourishes. Second thing we need is accountability, meaning wrong things happen. I mean, we live in a wrong world where many wrong things are happening at the moment. And we can't right every wrong, but we must try, as you quoted me saying. But to do that, you need accountability. When a wrongdoing happens, it needs to be investigated. The people responsible made accountable. That means serving the penalties under the law. But when organizations and the legal frameworks in countries simply brushes this under the carpet, then obviously corruption and mismanagement are going to happen. Therefore, this is the responsibility of citizens and other stakeholders in every country in the world to try and hold to account those in power, those in authority, and those who have an influence in public life, whether it's the private sector, government sector, or in this case, the international diplomatic sector, if I can put it that way.
Okay, Mukesh Kapila, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. We've been listening to you from Geneva, Switzerland. I'm very glad you made time for us. That's Mukesh Kapila, writer, professor emeritus in global health, humanitarian and strategy advisor. He's held leadership roles in government, United Nations and its multilateral agencies, the International Red Cross and Red Crescent. And he was the first to report on the unfolding scandal wrapped around the UN Office of Project Services, and we're grateful he was able to join us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Disconnect.
at work, I just take time. And all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer.
Oh, the late, great Aretha Franklin, I say a little prayer for you. Goodness, we all need a lot of prayers, that's for sure. Welcome back to the morning show, What's Going On? I'm the host, Rebecca Miles. This is 99.5 FM, WBAI. It's 7:31. It's still foggy, 57 degrees going up to 70, a high of 70. Tomorrow it's supposed to get up to 89 degrees. It's hard to believe today when it's so foggy and grey. Joining us for the second part of the show this morning is David Swanson. He's the executive director with World Beyond War and campaign coordinator with Roots Action. You remembered last week we had India Walton, who is doing strategic work for Roots Action. David will be joining us to help us understand how the U.S. Congress so easily voted to spend $40 billion on additional military aid to Ukraine with barely a dissenting voice and certainly little discussion about accountability and oversight. What we've just been talking about with Mukesh Kalali. And this is money going towards a war that's just 11 weeks old. It was David who co-founded the website After Downing Street, based on the Downing Street memos. So this is going about 20 years back now, but they were sometimes referred to as the Iraq War Smoking Gun memo, where British politicians discussed the build-up to the war. And he also started a campaign to impeach President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney, and was involved in the Occupy Washington movement. So, David, welcome to the show this morning.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
Great. So yesterday, of course, we heard that the Senate, in a vote 86 to 11, voted to agree to spend $40 billion on a Ukraine supplemental aid package. There were dissenting votes of, as I mentioned, 11 senators: Blackburn, Boozman, Braun, Carpo, Haggerty, Hawley, Lee, Loomis, Marshall, Paul, and Tuberville. But you've been very critical about this whole vote and the lack of discussion about it. So what was your sense when you heard that the bill had been passed, the package had been passed?
Well, unfortunately, that was a surprise to exactly no one. We knew it was going to pass just as it had passed the House. And we knew that any token opposition was going to come from members of the party not holding the throne at the White House. This is how it works. You have people who are slightly against war when it's a war that's labeled with the other of the two parties. And we always like to fantasize that there's, this handful of squad members or super progressives. There's 5 or 10 people who actually give a darn, who actually are against war, not into using war as electoral campaigning or partisan talking points. But there aren't, not a single Democrat in the House voted no on $40 billion. The president had asked for 33. They upped it to 40. The majority of it is for weapons. Some of it is for U.S. troops in a war that supposedly the U.S. isn't fighting. And not only no dissent, but no questioning in the corporate media, no interviews, no asking any, no asking Barbara Lee or Ilhan Omar or any of these people why they would vote for a pile of money like this to go principally to the weapons dealers whose profits are at record highs.
Well, really, could we say at this point there is only just the government? There's not really a two-party system. And if this benefits Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and the CIA and the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon, what we're really sort of saying here is that all the politicians are bought, is it?
Darn near, yes. if not bought directly by the jobs in their district where Lockheed's making one weapon in 85 different bits and pieces spread around the country, if not bought through access to corporate media, which requires pro-war views, if not bought through campaign contributions, as we call bribery in this country, if not bought through actual shameless open owning of the stock in these weapons companies and tweeting about how grand it is to make profits off war, bought through the persuasion of their parties, which largely control what individual members of the two parties do. And of course, a lot of us have pointed out for decades that the myth of bipartisan, of partisan gridlock, of partisan disagreement has never really applied to war and militarism. There's always been great bipartisan harmony. But the difference now is, as far as the Democrats go, the pretense is gone. You know, we don't have a handful of progressive Democrats pretending as they did just a couple years ago to be creating a so-called defense spending reduction caucus. You know, the thing never came into being. There's no website. It's never issued even a single statement. The last big military spending bill, the one last year, and we can expect the same this year, had not a single Democrats speak out against it, say they were going to vote no on it, at least not in the House. I'm aware of one senator who said, you know, at least shortly before the vote that he was going to vote no, and that was Bernie Sanders. That's the extent of the opposition to militarism. They've dropped even the pretense of it.
I mean, there was some reporting. We heard, of course, that the dissent from Senator Rand Paul about saying there wasn't, calling for an independent inspector general to oversee the funding, and he wanted it written into the legislation. Now, I understand the bill does provide oversight for an inspector generals at the Defense and the State Department, but of course, we know what the internal inspector generals, you know, what the results of that might be. So this call for an independent inspector, that went really nowhere.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it ought not to be something that would satisfy us at all, right? To know exactly where the money is going. But when you openly have House and Senate members talking about having no ability to know where these weapons are going to end up, and it's massive piles of weapons, yeah, that does make it even worse. And when you have sort of inside the beltway quasi anti-war organizations crowing about the good inspection and oversight measures that they got included into this bill in the House. I mean, this is to brag about the shade of lipstick on a really toxic radioactive pig. I mean, yes, we ought to have oversight. There ought to be accountability. The Department of so-called Defense ought not to be able to go unaudited, unlike any other agency, but we ought not to be dumping billions and billions of dollars into escalating and maintaining and preventing the negotiated settlement of a war. You know, the UN says $30 billion a year would end starvation on Earth. This is $40 billion to escalate a war that, among other things, is going to cause massive starvation through famine, through the destruction of crops. You know, many more people are going to starve as a result of not using this money for food than are going to be killed with these weapons unless it goes nuclear. So, I mean, this is just beyond where we ought to be discussing at all.
So, I mean, there's been massive consolidation in the media, mass media, so I understand why you're not hearing it there. But what also seems to be absent is anything in terms of mass protest on the street, although maybe I'm just not seeing it or it's not being covered. But I certainly haven't seen it in New York. I remember going back, I started opening the show with the work that you had done over the Downing Street memo. I remember that protest when the prospect of going to war in Iraq was, you know, first brought up. A million people turned out to protest outside the UN. that kind of mass organization doesn't seem to be happening at the moment, or it's all migrated to digital protests. What's going on with the grassroots efforts?
You know, there were a couple of professors who went around for years interviewing everybody at all those events when we had those big crowds in 02, 03, 04, 05. And they came to the conclusion in a book called Party in the Streets that when you have one of the two big political parties acting as if it opposes war because its war's labeled with the other party, you can get big crowds of people. But as soon as that party drops its opposition to war and defunds all those groups, as happened around 2007, to focus on the more important work of electing Barack Obama to the White House, well, then most of those people disappear because they were anti-war as an anti-Republican tactic. They weren't pro-Democrat as an anti-war tactic. And so ever since then, it's been both of those things you said. It's been a lack of media coverage of what is happening, and it's been the drastically reduced size of what is happening. So we've been doing periodically global days of action with rallies and protests at government offices and weapons dealers and in big public places in New York City and everywhere else. The corporate media ignores it, but it's able to ignore it because it's not millions, it's thousands. And in defense of Congress, it isn't hearing from millions of people the way it should be to oppose escalating wars. And the job that the corporate media has done is just incredible. I mean, to take literally millions of people who had no opinion on foreign policy whatsoever, and in a matter of days, have passionate opinions about Ukraine at the top of their heads, the thing they talk about rather than the weather. It's really an impressive job.
Yeah. Effective propaganda.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Of course, this money that they've put towards the Ukraine, they have to borrow this. This is putting the country into further debt or debting further generations. It's not like it's ready available. And of course, it comes out of taxpayer monies. I'm just thinking, of course, we're looking at midterm elections. We're going to face another general election. But you now have this sort of consolidation on, we can't get any domestic packages approved. There the two parties separate when it comes to domestic issues. But where's the chance of any kind of support behind third parties? Is this like a non-starter? Can there ever be a third party and any chance of building some sort of momentum behind them?
Well, we've all had that conversation for decades, and not much has changed. The two parties are useless, but a third party is disempowered by the system. I think the main thing we need to do is focus on the fact that massive nonviolent direct action can do things that elections can't. And the notion that we need to sit on our hands and wait for another election and then vote. I mean, I saw an op-ed everywhere. Voting won't protect abortion rights. That didn't bother to mention what might, you know, including massive nonviolent direct action. I mean, the New York Times this morning compares the cost of all this money to Ukraine. First of all, it splits it into military and non-military, even though a lot of the non-military is military. And then it compares it not with actual spending on useful things, but with possible spending on useful things that Congress is nowhere near passing, as if to say, well, yeah, sure, it's a giant pile of money, but if Congress were to do any of these other things, they would cost money too. It just absurd. This is a disaster, not just because Congress is helping Ukrainians rather than people in the United States. Congress is destroying Ukraine rather than helping people all over the world, including in the United States. That's the kind of money we're talking about. And the sanctions are damaging people economically everywhere, including in the United States. And the efforts that are going into punishing countries that buy oil from Russia, if they were going into generating sources of energy that humanity can survive, I mean, this is the big problem here, is that this war is putting a giant roadblock in front of global cooperation on climate, on disease, on refugees and poverty. And, you know, we're at the finish line here. We don't have time for this.
No, it's true. It's true. We're listening to David Swanson, Executive Director of World Beyond War. We will take a little musical break and open up the phone lines for any questions you might have for him. And if not, we'll continue the conversation. Thank you for being with us this morning.
About a lucky man who made the grade, and though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. Didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was on the house of law.
And that was The Beatles, A Day in the Life. Welcome back to the show. It's What's Going On. I'm the host, Rebecca Miles. I understand we have three callers. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hi, I'm calling from Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Afro-American and I am a musician. I heard all of the squad voted for the $40 million. And I heard Marjorie Taylor Greene's speech against the $40 million. And then I heard Jamie Raskin's horrible, arrogant response to that. The problem is now is that the left candidates that are there are getting PAC money against Nina Turner Lost. Summer Lee almost lost this enormous PAC money. So unfortunately, at this point in time, all of the people that are elected people in the Democratic Party are absolutely afraid to say anything against this. My question to you, and also you say you're connected with India Walton. Look at what happened with that campaign. She got sabotaged by your same New York Democratic Party. At this point, there's no point in voting for the Democratic Party. A third party has to be formed. It's just at this point, I hate to say it, you know, but at this point, the people that are in there are all scared. The people that they think that will do something, they actually make sure that they don't get into office. And also online, they're deleting people like Glenn Greenwald, Max Blumenthal, Scott Ritter. You don't have mass protests because you can't get the information except here on BAI. So that's my question.
What's your question?
My question is, do you think that we should put our energies into forming a third party, because protest alone is not going to do it? They can send in PACs. and just wipe out any candidate that they think is going to do anything. Look at Ilhan Omar right now. She sent.
Let's see if David.
Got my question.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you very much, caller. David, that the question then about putting efforts behind a third party. Of course, you've actually, in some of your work, have called for succession, saying that the country's just too big and broad. But, you know, what can we do politically? What can we do? Because the corruption and these are not addressing. Will it be succession? Will it have to be some sort of revolution? Is that really where we're heading?
Well, I appeal to every wonderful WBAI listener to go and fix my Wikipedia page. I've written hundreds of thousands of articles, and the fact that I wrote one 20 years ago about secession, suggesting that that's a big focus of my work is kind of absurd. But yeah, obviously the United States could be more democratically, run if it were smaller. Its size is a hurdle. It's the same darn conversation decade after decade. Right. We must form a third party. We must not form a third party. Obviously, it's one of those things that if everybody did it, like everybody not paying their taxes for the military or everybody going and occupying Washington and surrounding the Capitol, if everybody did it all together tomorrow, it would work. If a handful of people do it and it's not on the corporate media and it's shut out of the debates and it's shut out of the ballots, then it will go on being the thing that we should all do, but doesn't actually work. The answer, not to leave people with this sense that there's no answer because the two parties don't work and the third party can't get in, is to drop the absurd obsession with elections, for God's sake, which have brought us so little over the past centuries in comparison with non-electoral, non-violent, creative, direct action of all kinds, which, among many other things, has created elections and reformed elections. You can't reform a broken election system by voting. You have to go outside of that. But the caller is absolutely right. We do these primaries. We elect these better Democrats, some of them on anti-war platforms. They get into office and they flip. Cori Bush put out a statement sort of opposing her vote for the $40 billion, but she still voted for it, right? Jamie Raskin, whose dad has got to be spinning in his grave, has become a Russiagator, a militarist, an incredible disappointment. And people like Summer Lee and Jessica Cisneros, have no platform whatsoever, have no opinion whatsoever on the federal budget, on the military, on wars, on peace, on treaties, on international law. Doesn't exist. They're just campaigning for that minority of the job, that 40% of the job that's domestic spending. And you have someone like this candidate out in Oregon who apparently may win, McLeod Skinner, who has an anti-war platform, but you can count on it lasting about 3 minutes once she gets to Washington, D.C.
Right. Do we have any more callers before we start to head out?
Yes.
Hello, caller. Hello. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm calling from Riverdale. That was a very thorough and lengthy answer. Two comments. The guest before, the UN has been corrupt about even the climate change and human-induced climate change since 1980. That's my comment on that. It's not correct. Why do we have these individual fights about the spending? Why don't we just all get together and make amendments to the Bill of Rights or the Constitution that no money goes abroad over a certain amount or for a list of purposes unless there's a national vote? Because clearly the representatives, it's all business and it's like a carte blanche. And we just watch it. It's like getting out of a movie theater and there's two escalators going down and everybody's just in line following the leader going down one escalator.
Yeah.
Stupid. Yeah. Change the law that no money goes abroad. I think it's in 2000 we can do that now. And in the history of this country, I think maybe that's what we should be working on. And that's where all the nonprofits and money should be dumped into, to change the law so that every single time money is going out of this over the ocean and across the border, you got to vote on it. The people, that has to be taken into account. You know, this is all baloney. You know, people who are in politics are not representing the people to a most positive result way. You know, it's just all, you know, absentee kind of like stuff and omitting and omission, lying by omission. And, yeah, let's hit the streets. Well, what are you hitting the streets for? If you pass a law, you don't have to hit the streets. Let's save all that work. Change the law that it's got to be a national vote. You know, we want to send money to Ukraine for military weapons, a national vote. You know, you want to go invade Grenada or go kill Gaddafi, a national vote. You know, just make it straight and plain. Hey, we're going to go kill Gaddafi. Do you want? Are you in or you're out? You know, okay, thank you.
Thank you, caller. I'm sorry, David, we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're just talking to David Swanson, Executive Director of World Beyond War and Campaign Coordinator with Roots Action. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you'll come back on another occasion. The morning show will be back on Monday with Bob Henley. On Saturday, don't miss Dance Parade New York. That's a grassroots action that's now in its 16th year. Coming up next is Democracy Now. Thank you for listening. Thank you to the engineering skills of Michael G. Haskins. The show wouldn't be possible without him. He keeps me grounded and tethered and makes sure it all runs beautifully smoothly. Thank you to Linda Perry for giving me this opportunity. I'm Rebecca Miles. This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York Radio, 99.5 FM. Thank you for joining me this morning.
This is Imhotep Gary Bird giving double thanks to WBAI listeners. For many years, you've supported my Friday show, The Global Beat Experience, and The Global Beat, where we explore the full dimension of black music and politics. And more recently, you've made my new Sunday evening program, Radio GBE Mind Flight, your gateway to the black experience, a success as well. In that spirit, I hope you show some of that same enthusiasm to some friends of mine who host a new show highlighting the people, music, and venues that made Harlem a cultural mecca. It's called The Harlem Connection. You're invited to get on board and take the journey every Friday evening with the GBE at 7, Untitled at 9, and The Harlem Connection at 10, right here on WBAI.
New York City's Vision Zero initiative reminds you that speeding ruins lives. Drivers, always look for pedestrians crossing our streets and look out for cyclists. Slow down to 5 miles per hour when you make a turn. Remember, safe driving saves lives.
Once again, you are tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI.